today we're wrapping up the original conspiracy theory of all conspiracy theories, the JFK assassination, and we're going to unpack the rest of James Shelby Downard's King Kill 33, a theory about the alchemical process to make manifest all that is hidden. Join me here today on Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. Now, you already know, this is part three, which means you've completed part one and two. And if you've completed part one and two, that means you're on the supporter feeds, and I thank you. This is my June-July bonus supporter feeds, bonus shows that I do for the supporters that keep the show alive. I say that, I mean that, that is you. Thank you so much. And today we're going to wrap up this King Kill 33 analysis. We're going to talk about the alchemical coding of the JFK assassination, and we're going to walk through the final chapters. Oswald's divine language of Oz, which should ring a lot of bells. The funerary rites and symbolism of the Green Dragon. JFK's coffin symbolism and rituals. Some coded Freemasonry events at the White House. The Ginkgo tree tying into Jack Ruby's circus. Scapegoat and how that works with the alchemical process of the killing of the king. Camelot of King Arthur's magical court. The mass ritual orchestrated events, including the Masonic involvement in the Warren Commission, the Knights Templar, and of course the final goal of why all this is happening. I'm going to zoom it all the way out and we're going to break it down. So, without further ado, let's get into it. We're on set 7, chapter 8. No. Chapter 7. Wow. Oswald. And Oswald... James Shelby Downard asserts Oswald means divine strength, otherwise known as Oz, right? Because O-S or O-Z is a Hebrew word for strength. So when Jack Ruby killed the divine strength of Oswald, Downard connects it to the ruby slippers in the Wizard of Oz, and I connect it to Twin Peaks, David Lynch. He's obsessed with Wizard of Oz, and we see it so many times when we go through the Grey Lodge series of Twin Peaks. So Oswald was apparently, according to this King Kill 33, at a Soviet Union behavior control center where he was rooming with some Cuban people, and Downard asks why he would have to go all the way over to the Soviet Union for mind control when we've got the capabilities right here in America. And he knew it, right? Downard knew this way ahead of time. And he talks about how even the autopsy of Oswald was quite odd, and talks about the metempsychosis, the passing of the human soul into the body of an animal, which is very much like the idea of the familiars or the spirits. Kind of, again, Twin Peaks, the owls are not what they seem. I'm going to read you, because he starts getting into Euclidean sex geometry. He says, in the 47th problem of Euclid lies a secret of the third degree of Masonry. Pythagoras is called by the Freemasons our ancient friend and brother. One of Pythagoras' main doctrines was the system of metempsychosis, which pertains to the passing of a human soul into the body of an animal. Perhaps this was the intention of the autopsy. By incising in Oswald's body the letter of Pythagoras, they sought to expedite transmigration, and they may even have gone as far as feeding sections of Oswald's corpse to the intended animal, for this too is a practice of what used to be widely feared as necromancy. Now, does that sound like Twin Peaks? Yes, it does, right? Remember, because Bob was putting the letter of Pythagoras, into the body of the victim. Then we talk about the JFK family, the Fitzgeralds. How they lived. Now we're on set 8, funerary rites. And he says that the Fitzgeralds lived near the former site of the Green Dragon Tavern, which was built in 1680 and then demolished in 1820 to widen the road. And this is going into the bloodline of JFK and his mother, Rose Fitzgerald, which makes me wonder if Downard had, surely he had connected the dots on the symbolism of the rose used in Rosicrucianism or the rosy cross, right? The symbol of the hidden feminine of the divine up against the cross, the union of the soul and the divine. It's a symbol of completion. And it's, again, the same idea that Downard is presenting of these opposing forces, the spiritual mixed with the material. It's the rose on the cross. It's life with death. It's beauty with pain, you know, because the rose has the thorns. Every rose has its thorns. Crowley saw the... Imagine being Bret Michaels. I mean, every day of his life, he wears that bandana and cowboy hat. Doesn't the technology exist for people to go get the hair transplants? Like, just go do it, man. It's a good-looking dude. Rock star. Anyway, Crowley saw that the rose and the cross were, again, the feminine masculine principles, but he associated with Kabbalah, the Bina and Chakma, and believed that the unionization of these opposing forces in Kabbalah were the key to spiritual enlightenment. Now, the Fitzgerald home was the one at the former Green Dragon Tavern was on Hanover Street, which was then met up with Green Dragon Lane, which is now Union Street. This is what Downard's saying. And he says that the Green Dragon Tavern was the first lodge room of Freemasonry in all of America, with the St. Andrew's Lodge located within the tavern. This is all fascinating to me because I'm from a little town in Lancaster, PA, where there's the Green Dragon Flea Market. And the Green Dragon is also Chinese symbolism for death, and the symbol is worn on a ring or held in the hand of a hatchet man. That's what Downard says. And again, it makes me think of the Juggalos. They have the hatchet man. And they always wear the hatchet man on jewelry. And it means that it's a license to kill. It's a symbol for death. And it symbolizes the murder to honor the green dragon as the guardian of the god with 1,000 eyes who protects the sanctity of the third heaven. Like I said, Downard's going deep, right? Also, Twin Peaks, the jade ring, like the green dragon, also symbolic of the death. You will be assassinated if you're wearing the jade ring. He keeps elaborating. He says, the green dragon is also symbolic of the raw, chaotic prima materia in alchemy. It's the base material that will be purified. And Carl Jung apparently said that the green dragon is the shadow self. Right. And in Tantra, they believe in the opposing forces of the Shiva and the Shakti locked in sexual union. And this is depicted by the Chinese with the green and red dragons, as well as the Sumerians. It's the sacred marriage of opposites. When there is a perfected harmony of opposing forces, the creation of the philosopher's stone happens, which is the union of divine spirit, soul, and body. This is the great work. This is pulling the divine spirit of light into the physical body. The point he's trying to make here is the ideas of alchemy present themselves synchromystically through a lot of the bloodlines, locations, sacred locations, and geometry of JFK and the people involved. Kind of like in alchemy, they use a green lion to symbolize the devouring of metal, taming the forces of nature. Then he goes on to the symbolism of the coffin, and he said that, because JFK, obviously Irish, right? that a lot of the Irish in Boston came to America in coffin ships, and they called them coffin ships because they had high mortality rates. And the members of the Kennedy family were acquainted with the Coffin family. A guy named William Sloan Coffin, Henry Sloan Coffin. And Henry Sloan Coffin was in the Peace Corps Advisory Council that was headed by Sergeant Shriver. And JFK's sister, Eunice, married Sergeant Shriver. And it says that, so I looked up, well, before we get into that, I looked up William Sloan Coffin Jr., and he was a peace activist, a clergyman. He led a lot of anti-Vietnam War protests, which made me wonder if that was, because JFK, I'm not a historian, but I guess he kind of got us into Vietnam. We were sending advisors and intelligence agents over there, but maybe the argument is that he didn't want a full-scale war and invasion with U.S. troops, so that's why they got rid of him, because LBJ was like, all right, I'm about that action. Let's send him over. Which made me wonder if that's where the Coffin family influence could have been with JFK. Maybe. But William Sloan Coffin, his grandfather was part of like the old money, right? And this ties into the Tiffany family, the jewelry company. And the Sloans had also married with another old money bloodline called the Auchincloss, who was part of Jackie O's family because her stepfather was Hugh Auchincloss Jr. It gets very confusing. We need a red string map here. Anyway, back to Downard. Let's talk about... Okay, so the Encyclopedia of Freemasonry talks about the coffin in ritual because he doesn't really get too deep into the symbolism of the coffin, which kind of surprised me. Let's see here. Encyclopedia of Freemasonry says... In the ancient mysteries, the aspirant could not claim a participation in the highest secrets until he had been placed in the pastos, bed or coffin. The placing of him in the coffin was called the symbolical death of the mysteries, and his deliverance was termed a rising from the dead. The mind, says an ancient writer quoted by Stobius, is affected in death just as it is in the initiation into the mysteries. And word answers to word as well as thing to thing, for burial is to die and death is to be initiated. The coffin in masonry is found on tracing boards of the early part of the last century and has always constituted a part of the symbolism of the third degree, where the reference is precisely to the same as that of pastos in ancient mysteries. And you know what they're talking about is, again, life and death rituals. The candidate will... go through a death symbolically in order to be reborn into the occult mysteries. So the coffin is utilized with this. You see this with the skull and bones rituals where they lay the candidates into coffins. It's a powerful initiation experience from what I understand. Never done it myself. I don't know. But I feel like crawling into a coffin probably feels really creepy. So JFK... had a book called Three Steps to the White House, and Downard says it's a reference to the three grand steps from life to the afterlife. It's a Freemasonic idea from darkness, taking three grand steps from darkness into light, which is taken through the symbolism ritual of death and the coffin. Because after the grand steps, you now achieve eternal life. And this is all done in the first degree of Freemasonry in the Blue Lodge. The entered apprentice, as they start their journey towards their union with the divine and enlightenment and their own great work. He talks about a photo that was taken of JFK with Tito, a guy named Josip Broz, on some winding stairs. Now, Tito is a Masonic title given to Prince Herodim, not to be confused with Herodome that we were talking about in part two, I think. This was the first judge and provost appointed by King Solomon, and he was one of the 12 knights in the 12 tribes of Israel. So Tito, also interesting. And then he talks about how the winding stairs are symbolic in Freemasonry. I thought this was interesting because we talk about the spiral staircases often. The legend of the winding stair is taught in the degree of fellowcraft. This is the second degree, and a person at this grade is, of course, a candidate for the symbolical assassination, Eurases, autopsy, coffin, resurrection of the third degree. The number of steps in the winding stair are odd, although no less so than the fact that this Tito or Herodim is a name translating as those who rule over the activities of the Temple of Solomon. The winding stairs of this temple, according to the Masons, begin at the porch and winds to a level purified by the divine presence, Shekinah, and dominated by the divine strength, Oswald. So we finally found a connection here with the spiral staircase stuff that always go back to, I don't even remember which book. One of the books about Charles Manson, he talks about how the commune he was rolling around with, the family, had found evil at a place called the Spiral Staircase in L.A. that has since been destroyed. Because he was at this party and it was satanic in nature and he felt like it sort of possessed the family in a way. But he says a lot of stuff, so who knows? But the idea of the spiral staircase is that the initiate is going on a journey and they can't quite see where it's headed. It's ascending towards illumination. Illuminate and confirming. Spiraling like the Caduceus in the Go with the Bobs. Then we're on to set 9, chapter 9, The Ginkgo Tree. And he goes to Peru, Indiana, which is known as the Circus City. And he suggests that clowns are part of a trickster phenomenon in Freemasonry. And he says that the circus performers are a vocation with the highest number of Masons. Now, this is what's interesting because he just said that about railroad workers also. And how does he know all this back then? Anton LaVey was in the circus. He got his start out in the circus to learn how to be a showman, a trickster, magician in a way. Plus, you had all that traveling man stuff we talked about with the railroad things. And at this point, he pastes in a section of the Warren Commission Report, which he talks about later. Or my copy is out of order, which, again, I don't think so. I took a long time trying to put this thing into order. It says, Bob Mulholland, NBC News, Chicago, talked in Dallas to one Ferry, David Ferry. Ferry said that Oswald had been under hypnosis from a man doing a mind-reading act at Ruby's Carousel. Now, that is interesting. I haven't read the Warren Commission. I presume that's true. Because Ruby's Carousel was the club owned by Jack Ruby, right? This is the Carousel Club. And he was the guy that obviously shot and killed Lee Harvey Oswald. And the implication could be that there was some kind of MKUltra link. This is right in the midst of the MKUltra experiments, along with the Charles Manson murders, which I do believe is associated. Which I'd wondered if Downer knew MKUltra was the thing when he wrote this, but later he references a book called Operation Mind Control, which suggests that MKUltra was known to the public at the point that he wrote this book. Jack Ruby, also his real name was Jack Rubenstein. He changed it to Ruby because it's shorter. But the red gemstone is symbolizing blood or blood sacrifices. He was sentenced to death. It was overturned on appeal. He was given a new trial. But then he died of a, quote-unquote, cancer-caused pulmonary embolism January 3rd, 1967. And he died at the age of 55. Very strange. I mean, he died shortly after, relatively shortly after murdering Oswald. And there's alleged connections to be had with organized crime. Ruby was originally from Chicago. And some people think that the intelligence agencies work with mobsters and maybe they wanted JFK dead and he arranged some elements of this. It goes on and on. As you know, the JFK assassination is the granddaddy of conspiracies. Then he wraps up the talk about Peru, Indiana. He says there's a tree there called the Assassin's Tree that's a ginkgo tree. And he claims that in Japan, it's associated with assassinations, sex, and martial arts. Okay, next. And like I said, at the end of this episode, we're going to zoom all the way out and try to put all this together, because I know you're probably thinking, like, bro, you're talking about ginkgo trees and circuses. What are you talking about? Because that's how I felt. I was like, this feels kind of chaotic. It'll make sense, more sense, by the end. Hang in there. Set 10, the scapegoat. He claims that JFK was the human scapegoat, the pharmakos. The pharmakos means enchantment with drugs and sorcery, and it also means beaten, crippled, or immolated. Then he talks about the alchemical idea of the killing of the king, which was symbolized as a crucified snake on the Tau cross, which he asserts is a play on Christ. We talked about the Tau cross earlier as a symbol of sort of like the Rose cross. And I looked up, because I wanted more, because he doesn't go too deep in the weeds on some of these alchemical ideas. So I got a couple alchemy books. One of them is The Complete Idiot's Guide to Alchemy. I know, embarrassing, but it's pretty good. It's easy to read. I like it. It turns out I'm an idiot, all right? And it says that the symbolism of the putrefaction process, let me back up here. The Tau cross is the symbol of the putrefaction process, which is the first step in the fermentation when the matter is allowed to rot and decompose, right? Because they're trying to get down to the prima materia, the base construct. And it's a step closer to the end game, the philosopher's stone. It's a step closer than the negredo, the darkening. But the fermentation is part of the red phase, right? Because you got negredo, which is the black phase, the white albedo phase, and the red rubedo phase, which, by the way, rubedo also means ruby, again with the Jack Ruby. And you would have a yellow phase shortly before the red phase. So the fermentation, apparently part of the red phase, which is the last phase. But the white phase is about purification and preparing for that final rubedo phase. Whereas the symbol of the albedo is the white queen, the rubedo is the red king. And you'll see these depicted in alchemical artworks as a couple holding hands. It's a veiled reference to alchemy, because they couldn't speak out loud about these things back in the day. And this fermentation process is an ancient spiritual process. They thought that the end result of the fermentation into alcohol was the spiritual essence of the substance, which is why we get the term spirits today. Right? See how that all connects? Exciting. Exciting stuff. It says that... All right, I think we're back. Okay, so... Now we're... Oh, man, I don't know if this is from the book or from King Kill 33. I could probably find it for you, though. Let's get to the bottom of this, because I actually think the reading of this seems like it's from the Guide to Alchemy. Yeah, this is the Guide to Alchemy still. Okay. The cipher alchemists used to designate putrefaction as the astrological fire sign of Leo, which the Egyptians associated with the lion-headed sun god Sekhmet. Images of putrefaction included corpses, graves, coffins, there's that coffin again, massacres, mutilation, worms, dung beetles, and rotting flesh. Alchemical drawings at this stage depict birds descending from a pitch-black sky, skeletons standing over coffins or black boxes, or a snake crucified on a cross. So we see that the snake crucified on the cross, the Tau cross there, is part of the putrefaction, which had symbolized the final death of any contaminants or remnants of the ego in matter needed for the rebirth to perfect the spiritual soul there in the process of alchemy. So that's like kind of a deeper cut on what he's trying to say. Killing of the king or the assassination can't be held down in any old-fashioned matter. There's a specific correspondence to ancient fertility rituals that he talks about, And that's why you had the three tramps, the three hobos, symbolizing the three unworthy craftsmen of masonry, meaning the murder won't be solved because there's a vow of silence in the Masonic Brotherhood. And Downard even calls the three hobos doppelgangers of the actual murderers. Again, Twin Peaks, right? That's what I'm saying. I feel like this thing is all over Twin Peaks. I'm going to read you from King Kill 33. Perry Raymond Russo told a New Orleans grand jury that CIA agent David Ferry said regarding the assassination of JFK that there would have to be a minimum of three people involved. Two of the persons would shoot diversionary shots, and the third shoot the good shot. Ferry said that one of the three would have to be the scapegoat. He also said that Ferry discoursed on the availability of exit, saying that the sacrificed man would give the other two time to escape. Now, Downard even says after this that he can't endorse the accuracy of these claims, but he does use some interesting terms in here, like sacrifice, scapegoat, and he's referencing this book, Operation Mind Control by W.H. Bowert, which was published in 1978. So King Kill 33 confirmed to have come out after 1978, apparently, from my research. From common sense and my research. Okay, set 11, Camelot. We're almost done. Hang in there. Hang in there. JFK's JFK's administration was called Camelot, as most people know. Because this was the promising new young leader. He was the sort of King Arthur figure. Well, everyone knows King Arthur had a magician named Merlin. And Merlin was a sorcerer who utilized sex magic. And I had to dig into this. The ideas of the sex magic comes because Merlin apparently unionized with the Lady of the Lake, a Shiva Shakti type union. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. Downard just says that there's a Merlin involved here. And he starts connecting, he's riffing on these ideas of the sacred locations and things, and names and words, divine words, all that. And he says that King Arthur's castle was near to Tintagel, the Camel River, and Camel Ford. Which is confusing because King Arthur was mythology and no one really knows for sure if it was real, what was real. But anyway, he's just kind of talking about it sort of factually. And he talks about the Camelot, the White House having the camel symbolism now that JFK is the Camelot administration. And he talks about the first officer in charge of the Camel Corps in the U.S. Army was a guy named Lieutenant Edward Beale, which again takes us all the way back to the beginning with the talk about Beale stuff. Remember that? We connected Beale to Ball in part one. And then he talks about the assassination attempts of Project Camelot. And this is where things get really interesting here. He says some pretty powerful things for an OG conspiracy theorist. So let's read from his works here. All right. King Kill 33 says, Camelot turns up again in Death Dealing as Project Camelot, the U.S. attack on the vicious communist regime of Allende, which ended in the execution of Salvador Allende. Readers are warned away from drawing specious conclusions. That means false. I had to look that up. Specious conclusions regarding the nature of the conspirators simply because an occasional Marxist is eliminated. If statistics are to be the guide, the conspiracy is overwhelmingly leftist by this criteria, since the suppressed number of persons assassinated far exceed those of left-wing sympathies. The entire left-wing, right-wing scenario is a chess game where various pawns are motivated by emotions to follow the orders of kings and queens, whose allegiance is to psychological control objectives, and propaganda is one of the ways that psychological control is established. Might be the most important takeaway from this entire book. what is he saying here? Well, he's saying that you've got the left versus right paradigm, and it's all a chess game. It's the Hegelian dialectic that we've heard from David Icke and so on. And it leads to psychological control objectives that uses propaganda to control the masses. And he provides an answer to the question that I always have. If the intelligence agencies, the ABCs, are constantly taking out communists and Marxists and leftists, and we think that the intelligence agencies are bad because they're spying on us and doing assassinations and overthrowing governments secretly without we're paying the salaries. Why don't we get a say in what they're doing? So if they are bad, then doesn't that mean that maybe the left is good, right? And Downard would answer this question, apparently. He would say, look past all that, because there are moves being made on both sides, the left and the right, that are progressing us down the same path. And he calls all this the political psychodrama. And he asserts that both sides are in on it. Both sides play a role. And I think that's why I am so hard on right-wingers. It's not because I like the DNC or trust the Democrats particularly. The reason I'm always so hard on the right is because it seems that almost the entire truther movement campaigns for the right and acts as if the right isn't involved with any of this. And it's maddening to me, because I can see when they point out the left taking part of conspiracies, I point them out myself. And it's where the right doesn't get the same treatment, right? And I think this is all because people are sheep. I think people, Alex Jones is like the big dog, right? He's the biggest conspiracy, him and David Icke are the biggest conspiracy theorists in the world. Alex Jones, obviously more known by the American public, and he is constantly shilling for the right. If you go to his website any day, you'll see it reads like a political news outlet now, which drives me nuts, because I'm like, dude, I thought the whole deal from every red pill daddy I had, David Icke holds true to it, though. He's calling out people, too. But David Icke and Bill Cooper and now Downard also are all saying the same thing. Like, look, like this thing is coordinated by the left and the right. And he brings up Project Camelot, which I had to look into. I didn't know a lot about it. It was a military operation to predict and influence revolutionary behaviors in Latin America. And the conspiracy is that there was psychological warfare being done to change regimes in Chile. And it was part of a CIA-supported coup of Salvador Allende in 1973, just like Downard says. And the Wikipedia page for Project Camelot said that there was a software program called Politica that ran simulations, and it advised the CIA to kill Allende if they wanted to do a coup d'etat. Like, they couldn't let him live. So the AI was killing people way back then. And Allende was this, you know, he was a leftist, socialist. He was the first Marxist to be elected president in a liberal democracy in Latin America. So, you know, America, America's like, nah, playboy, we don't do that over here. Total psychological warfare. Also, I should note, when he talked about, he was connecting the divine naming of camels in with Camelot and connects it to Beale. I wanted to throw in some more interesting connections to the camel. If you look at Aleister Crowley's Amalantra Working, it was a ritual he did in 1918 in New York. He actually coordinated this with his Scarlet Woman named Roddy Miner, and her nickname was Camel. And he wrote a diary about the events. It's called Lieber 729, and it depicts a series of contacts that these two were making, visions, all kinds of stuff. And there's this wizard who told the camel that he was trying to get a hold of Crowley. Anyway, This is the one where she had visions of eggs under the palm tree, and we talked about the egg being a major component of the UFO disclosure movement as of lately. Okay, back to Downard, though. We're almost done. We're almost done with the book itself, and then there's like an appendix that we'll walk through real quick. Set 12, the Warren Commission. This is the final chapter, I believe. So Lyndon Baines Johnson, who he connects into all this, right, with the name, he was a Freemason who appointed Earl Warren, another Freemason, to investigate the death of JFK through the Warren Commission. And Downard thinks JFK was murdered by Freemasons. So Gerald Ford and J. Edgar Hoover, both 33-degree Masons, were suppressing any kind of conspiracy evidence that was entered, pointing to the Freemasonic cryptocracy orchestrating this ritual. Alan Dulles, also a Mason, forwarded on the info into the Warren Commission as well. And Downard, who has a lot of humor in his writing, he compares it to having a panel of Nazis appointed to investigate the death of a Jew. Then he talks about Representative Hale Boggs, the only Catholic on the commission, who at first agreed with the findings, but then started to question the findings, and then dies in a plane crash, quote-unquote, accidentally. And he walks through the definition of hoodwink, a symbol of the secrecy, silence, and darkness in which the mysteries of our art should be preserved from the unhallowed gaze of the profane. That's from Albert Mackey. And that's how they view us, the sheep, the profane, the Coens. We'll talk about that soon. So that's basically it for the book. Then you've got these subsets, these sort of extra materials that add to the theory. Subset one is mythos. And he talks about the Knights Templar who were associated with the Assassins. In Freemasonry, they call them the Ishmaelites. And the founder of the Assassins was Hassan Sabah. He was the Old Man of the Mountain. And Assassins were basically the Freemasons of the East. And this was actually in Bill Cooper's Mystery Babylon series. He talks about all this. Let's see here. Masonic writers do not always agree on the legend of the three Assassins in their interpretations. Neither do they agree that there was a change of legend of the third degree into that of the Templar system, in which James de Molay was substituted for Hiram Abiff, with the three Assassins being represented by Squeen de Flexion, Nofode, and the Unknown, a triad of Assassins invented to inculcate a Masonic modus operandi. The wretched Sirhan Bishara Sirhan is one of the three Assassins and an Ishmaelite. Lee Harvey Oswald, Divine Power, is publicly linked in the group mind to the assassination, and in the symbolical way can be said to be the second of the three Assassins. James Earl Ray bears the same association and thus becomes, for the purposes of this study, the third of the three Assassins. And he's pointing out these connections of the three Assassins of JFK and how it ties into the Freemasonic ideas. Again, he's saying that the Warren Commission is covering up all the facts of this case, that there were three shooters. And one of them was the scapegoat. That was Lee Harvey Oswald. He talks about stonemasons being a mystical labor union, and they would build sacred architecture. He says they attach special significance to measurement, numbers, and the dimensions of the physical universe in much the same way as the god Kronos Saturn was supposed to govern these areas. You see, like, Downard might be the first guy to talk about all these things, all these ideas that we talk on a daily basis as conspiracy people. He might have been the first one. I mean, I feel like we need to respect that, right? Give him a little clap. All right. Also, Saturn, Twin Peaks, in the Red Room, just saying. The stonemasons they call them the Steinmetzen. They were a mystical labor union. This is the operative Freemasonry, not the speculative. And they would actually work the stone physically, right? And to stone wall, it takes on a symbolic and literal meaning. It means to have secrets or silence. So you got the Freemason architects of the stone building a wall, and then you got stone wall to have secrets, a vow of silence. And JFK was headed to LBJ's ranch in a town called Stonewall, Texas, which is near a town called Fredericksburg, Texas, a German town founded by stonemasons and walking carpenters. Fun fact, when I went to Austin for the great eclipse of 23? We actually drove west to try to catch the eclipse because of the cloud cover, and I believe we were driving past Fredericksburg. I didn't get a chance to stop in, though. Cool story, bro. Okay, so then he talks about the Freemasonic inversion of words. This one's actually pretty interesting. I'm going to read you again. By consulting the Masonic Encyclopedia, one will encounter a brief blurb by Dr. Mackey, which is probably one of the thinnest cover-ups in the entire work. It's the category called inversion of words. Apparently, the Masons wanted to be able to explain away various phrases so that the Cohens, the outsiders, that's the profane, that's us, might have come across in conversation or study with which, without such explanation, might be pondered to a degree detrimental to Masonic secrecy. Thus, the definition for word inversion is a sort of bewildered disclaimer running along the lines of, how did this get here? Poor befuddled Dr. Albert Mackey of the exalted 33rd degree would have us believe that word inversion is not a central part of Masonic ritual. Anyone recognizing the link between Masonry and Jewish Kabbalism, a connection which might be termed slave master, will note that a central dogma of the Kabbalah is the principle of the inverse Sephiroth as personified by the Klepoth, or the Lords of Chaos. If one inverts the letters of the word Avis, as in the rental car corporation, one encounters the Siva. Siva is Sanskrit for happy or auspicious. Siva is also the name of one of the gods in the Hindu triad, and in character represents become death, the shatterer of worlds, as a certain alchemist once said. The symbol of Siva is the lingam or penis. Siva, like Neptune and Satan, is usually pictured with a trident. Did he just illuminate, confirm Avis? Sure sounds like it. Now, this is also connecting us into the waiting room of Twin Peaks, the Red Room. And when they say Laura is filled with secrets, we can argue that the secrets are akin to this idea of the inversion of words. Downard says that Freemasonry and Kabbalah is a slave-master relation, meaning they work together in a certain way. So when Kabbalah says there's a dogma of inverse Sephiroth, we see it pop up in Masonry as the inversion of words. And he connects it to the Kabbalah, which has the dark side of the Tree of Life with the Klepoth. He says it right there. And curious enough, he refers to the statement, become death, the shatterer of worlds, which he says is a famous alchemist, which is referencing Oppenheimer and the Trinity Site atomic bomb test, which, as you know, is a major component of Twin Peaks: The Return. Interesting. November 19th, 1963, 3 days before JFK's assassination, was the date that the final security arrangements were made for JFK's visit. And he says, Tuesday is associated with operations of death, destruction, hatred, and discord, summoning the spirits of the dead, etc. Shrove Tuesday was the time, according to Druidic custom, for kicking the head around, and it is an activity now called the Shrove or Shrovetide football. The custom of kicking the head around can be traced to Chester, England, where the kicking of the head of a decapitated Dane became legend, and to Derby, England, where the heads of ill-fated members of the Legion of Rome were used. You know, out of all the years that we could be born and live through, I feel like we're doing okay. Relatively okay. Imagine living in a time where it was entertaining to take someone's head off and kick it around like a ball. 9/11 also on a Tuesday, by the way. utilizing Crowley's numbers 93, and it has the same goal as the JFK assassination, which is the final point of this whole thing. I'm going to read this final big old paragraph, and then we're going to zoom it all the way out, and we're going to wrap it all up. The point of 9/11, the point of JFK's assassination, making manifest all that is hidden, to reveal. This is the revelation of the method. He says, this method and process is summed up in the principle of the making manifest of all that is hidden, which is to seal finally and for all time the allegedly irresistible force of the eternal pagan psychodrama which works through every mass organization of man. In a literal alchemical sense, the making manifest of all this is that is hidden is the accomplishment of the third law of the alchemist and is, as yet, unfulfilled and at least not completed. The other two have been the creation and destruction of primordial matter, that's the Trinity site, basically, on the 33rd degree parallel, the killing of the king at the Trinity site, Dealey Plaza, near the 33rd degree of latitude. What remains is for a number of researchers acting through the Freedom of Information Act to make manifest all that is hidden in a way, according to the enemy, will be irremediably helpful to their cause. This is not a bluff meant to intimidate inquiry. That can only be done with terror or a physical or psychological nature. But human curiosity has never been successfully thwarted by threats of a curse, to say nothing of frustrating those who seek, on a higher level, justice and truth about the arch criminals of all history. I do not wish to discourage either of these actions, but rather supply you with the final information needed to create an object, if you like, which will serve as the immovable object to block their vaunted irresistible force. This attends the recognition of the desensitizing power revelations have over a hoodwinked populace who sink lower and lower as they discover the extent to which they have been duped and who may reactively search for a ruler or drug to put them asleep, to make them less aware. Only the repetition of information presented in conjunction with knowledge of this mechanism of the making manifest all that is hidden provides the sort of boldness and will which can demonstrate that we are aware of all the enemies, all the opponents, all the tricks and gadgetry, and yet we are still not dissuaded, that we work for the truth for the sake of the truth, and let the rest take upon themselves and their children the consequences of their actions. So, in conclusion, the fix is, I think, what I've always been saying, awareness is the key. You have to let them know that you're onto them. I think it's also interesting that he says, where was it here? This attends the recognition of the desensitizing power revelations. The desensitizing power revelations have over a hoodwinked populace who sink lower and lower as they discover the extent to which they have been duped. Meaning apathy, meaning you're kind of just like, oh man, they really got us. And instead of having any meaningful response, we search for a ruler or a drug to put us to sleep, to make us less aware, which I find very curious. So what was King Kill 33 talking about? Talking about JFK's assassination as an alchemical ritual done by the Freemasons. And the whole point of it was a mass ritual for us to traumatize us, to trigger a transformation through this ritualistic psychodrama. And all these ideas go back through occult symbolism, Kabbalah, synchromysticism, all these forces that they were able to pull together at that specific location and date and all that stuff. Because he calls it the toponymy, the mystical geography. It's important to these folks. There's certain energies locked in at certain ley lines. That's why the 33rd degree of latitude is important, and all the sites that he discusses in the in the King Kill 33, like the Dealey Plaza with Freemasonry, the Trinity site, Kern's Place, the Jornada del Muerto. These are all the ritualistic locations, the stages, if you will, for the drama, the psychodrama. And the ritual itself, the assassination, was the killing of the king, which is part of the alchemical process. And JFK was the scapegoat, the sacrificial king. And it's the spiritual death in the same way that a Freemason goes through a death and rebirth ritual, except this was the death rebirth of society. And a lot of these rituals are meant to emulate the sacred marriage of opposing forces, masculine, feminine, and the idea that there was this union, and you can play with it either way. And for them, they're into breaking it apart to release primordial energy, splitting the atom. You know, like the Trinity site, CERN, all that. And a lot of the symbolism connects into Freemasonry, like the three assassins, the Tau Cross, the Egyptian Trinity, because it always goes back to ancient Egyptian religious belief systems. There's sex magic ideas with the Great Whore, Miss Chudley, Marilyn Monroe. These are all part of the ritual. And, you know, sex and death ritual. You have a lot of sex, a lot of death. And part of the media's role is to show us the event, show us the ritual, show us the psychodrama, so that we can take part in the ritual. And he was talking a lot about MK Ultra ideas early on, stopping short of suggesting that maybe Oswald and Ruby were MK Ultra'd. A lot of ideas about the Freemasonic sciences, like the names tied into JFK's birthplace, Jackie Onassis' bloodline with Beale or Ball and Oswald connecting into Wizard of Oz. The royal bloodlines of the Radzivills, and how in American history there is influence to be had by these satanic sex magic groups like Francis Dashwood and Ben Franklin and the Hellfire Club and the Green Dragon, which has your alchemy stuff. And even the symbolism of Texas with the pentagram and so on adds into this mass ritual, right? And then also you add in the symbolism of the King Arthur symbolism, which is a recurring theme over and over and over. It's all over Twin Peaks. I talked about it at length in the Grey Lodge series. Which, by the way, if you haven't seen Twin Peaks, it's on Mubi right now. You can stream seasons 1 through 3. I don't know if they're going to stream Fire Walk with Me. You got to watch that movie, too, as part of the package deal. But the whole point of this King Kill 33, the whole point of a Freemasonic psychodrama ritual for the masses is making manifest all that is his. And that is the final goal of alchemy. It's the revelation that will either wake us up to a revolution to fight back against this, or it will, depending on who presents it to us and at what time, makes us sort of apathetically give up. And obviously, you know, Downard and all the truthers would say, no, we're not going to give up. Like, these freaks can't manipulate us and take away our free will and kill people, right? But we'll see what happens, right? We'll see what happens. So that the alchemical concepts go from the creation destruction of matter to break apart these opposing forces with the Trinity bomb test, then the killing of the king ritual in 63, and then this final stage is the making manifest all that is hidden. This is the final stage of the initiation, which is yet to come. This was Downard's warning to us. What's the final stage look like? Is it the AI apocalypse? Is it UFO disclosure? Is it a combination of these things? Is it the idea that they've been using occult practices, the Invisible College, to make contact with entities? Turns out the Crowleys and the Parsons and all these folks were able to actually make contact with entities, and the forces that be in our world have continued this practice, and that's the final stage of what they need to tell us. Strange times, but one thing I do know, James Shelby Downard, way ahead of his time, deserves way more respect than he gets. And I'm very happy to be able to walk through this document with you guys. So I appreciate everyone following along. Appreciate your support, keeping the show alive. All right. But stay tuned. We're not done with conspiracy classics. Our next book club is going to be 1984. I don't know when. I think maybe August, September, just depends. And we're going to walk through 1984. And it's going to be it's a terribly dark book. But we're going to have a good time. It's going to be great. So until then, next time, stay positive.